helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Have you ever been audited by the IRS, required to get a government license, or simply been stopped at a checkpoint? Now consider, what do all three of these actions have in common? Well, among other things, it is government placing the burden of proof upon we the people. See, we are expected to prove to the IRS that we file our taxes correctly, or that we're qualified for a license, or that we're acting legally when we approach a checkpoint. But this is not how the framers of our Constitution had designed our government to work. Look at the Fourth Amendment. The government needs probable cause before they can search or seize. Or under the Fifth Amendment, you have protection of due process. Now, if the government has the burden of proof in these areas, why not in others? What does it mean that the burden of proof has been put on we the people? And what can we do to restore a proper order in such situations? Well, hello there, everyday Americans. My name is Paul Engel, and you've joined us here at the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free, and sometimes that involves understanding what it means to be free. Now, it's interesting. Two words we hear quite frequently are freedom and liberty. And I like liberty. To me, it's a bit more defined. There's actually a rather lengthy definition of liberty by Noah Webster, but I can summarize it this way. Liberty is your ability to go about your life as you see fit without unnecessary external influence. All right, say it once again. Liberty is your ability to go about your life without unnecessary external influence. In other words, you get left alone. That's the basis of it. Now, this year, I'm traveling the country on what I call my Blessings of Liberty Tour, where I take that line from the preamble of the Constitution, and I ask the question, what are the blessings of liberty? How are we losing them? And more importantly, how do we get them back? And how do we get them back for ourselves? How do we take control? And part of this understanding comes this idea of a burden of proof. Who is required to prove themselves? I mean, just think of how often government simply assumes a power. And I'm talking about governments at all level. We need to do something. Okay, we'll pass a law to do something and never show a burden of proof that they actually have the power to do that. Or that the cure is not worse than the disease. I mean, probably the most prevalent example has been the accumulation of power in the federal government. The 10th Amendment is quite clear. A power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution exists somewhere else. It is therefore criminal for the federal government to assume a power not delegated to it. Why? Because it violates the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Yet that's exactly what they do each and every day. I keep saying this, when I researched my book, I found a website that listed all of the executive, all the federal departments and agencies. And the two things that struck me were, once you weeded out some of the ridiculousness, that 90% of the federal agencies, I could not come up with a power delegated to the United States that agency could possibly exercise. I mean, I was fairly generous. I looked at like the Department of the Interior. Well, okay, the federal government has Washington, D.C. Other lands are legally allowed to own, and they want to manage that. Okay, that makes sense. Obviously, the Department of Commerce has to deal with interstate and international commerce. But 90% of those, things like the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, you could look at it at the EPA, are not powers authorized by the Constitution. But even though our founding fathers, Alexander Hamilton, even the Supreme Court, have told us that an act of Congress contrary to the Constitution is invalid, it's void, it's meaningless, we still live as if whatever Washington says goes. Now, people claim, well, you got the Supremacy Clause. Yeah, the Supremacy Clause. It says the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. That only laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution are considered the supreme law of the land. And only treaties made under the authority of the United States are the supreme law of the land. In other words, not everything Congress does is the supreme law of the land. But we've placed the burden of proof on the people to prove that Congress acted badly rather than on Congress to say, no, we have this power. Look, here's how it is. Here's where we get this power. Anybody remember when they were debating the Affordable Care Act and a reporter asked Nancy Pelosi where in the Constitution Congress had the authority to pass such legislation? Does anybody remember her response? I do. She said, "Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?" Apparently the American people were, because the Affordable Care Act is still in effect today. Now, some of it was found, quote-unquote, unconstitutional, but the vast majority of it is still there. We live with socialized medicine today because we required the people to prove that what Congress did was wrong, rather than requiring our servants in government to prove they had the power to do what they were claiming to do. And by the people abdicating their responsibility to hold their creation in check, we now live in an upside-down world. A world where the Constitution of most of our states emphasized that all power is inherent in the people, yet the people must go begging to their creation for everything from what they can have in their cars to what light bulbs and toilets they can have in their homes, even to whether or not you're allowed to put something in your arm. We have shifted the burden of proof, and in doing so, made ourselves subjects to our governments, our government in Washington, in our state houses, and in many cases, in our county courthouses. Just think about building a home and getting all the permissions from the state and the county for everything you must put in that home, because supposedly to keep you safe, not necessarily to keep your neighbor safe, but to keep you safe. And this idea, this concept of the burden of proof was really drilled home this past weekend at the Moment of Truth Summit, when I saw people that were merely asking their government for the documentation for the elections they had held so that the people could choose their representatives, and how often they were denied. How often they were told by their supposed servants in government that they didn't have a right to know what went on in the election. They didn't have a right to the records. They didn't have a right to know and verify that the election was free and fair, much less make it transparent. And this idea really got under my skin. It reinforced the topic for this year's Blessings of Liberty Tour, this idea that our power structure has been inverted, and that so many of the problems we have because we misunderstand our governments, and how so many of the solutions we keep trying to find are simply us attempting to fit into this upside-down inverted power structure. Now, I don't want to give away too much, because I'd like you to actually come out to the conference, to the tour stops, and I've got several of them. I'm starting in April, right after Constitution Day. Now, if you want to find out more, please head to the website, constitutionstudy.com/tour. You can find out more about the tour. You can find out where I've already got dates confirmed. And you can also find out, you can also invite me to come and speak at your event. I have several events that people have asked, but I haven't confirmed with them yet. Everyone from California to Pennsylvania and stops in between. I got people in Nebraska and Oklahoma and Texas and Georgia and Florida, and I'd love to accommodate as many of these as possible. But if you want to get on that list, please do, and I'll start working on some of these events. But I think that it's kind of like the Hans Christian Andersen story, the Emperor's Clothes. if you're not familiar, it's usually referred to as the emperor who has no clothes. And it's a story of this emperor who gets conned by a couple of con artists into believing that he has clothes, that they could make him clothes so fine only special people could see it. And of course, not wanting to be seen as not special, the emperor goes along with it and claims to see the clothing that isn't really there. And of course, he wants to show off his amazing clothing. So he wanders through the city in no clothes. And of course, all the people are afraid to say anything. And I think that really parallels where we are today. We have a federal government that's exercising powers well beyond their authority. Remember, the Declaration says that governments get their just powers from our consent. We consent to their powers via Constitution. As the 10th Amendment says, we tell you what you can do, all other powers belong somewhere else. Yet they claim the authority to do everything from, again, regulating healthcare, determining whether, you know, what requirements there are for you to work, whether or not you have to wear a mask or take a jab, or what you need to be taught in school, or whether or not you have to allow boys in a girl's locker room, or on and on and on, what you can do with your pond, your stream, whether or not you can put, what you'll be required to get an electric vehicle or not. All of these things are claimed to be there, just as the emperor claimed he was wearing this wonderful fine apparel. And everybody, either, I don't know if out of ignorance or just out of fear, went along with it. They all agreed. They said, yep, oh man, he look good. Just as we sit here every day going, boy, isn't the federal government got all those powers? Even the states that are supposed to control their creation in Washington, D.C., sit back and beg it for the permission to do what they are authorized to do by their own existence, by the constitutions that created them. And this has been going on for decades, so we believe it is true. And the interesting thing about the story of the Hans Christian Andersen story is this went on until one young boy pointed at the emperor and said, he's got no clothes on. And I think this will continue until people like me and you point at the federal government and says, you don't have that power. It's not simple. Well, that's unconstitutional. No, you do not have the power to do that. You don't have the authority to do that. Until we get our employees in our states to recognize, no, the federal government doesn't have that power, and it's our duty to stand up and say, no. If it's not in the Constitution, you cannot do it. That is not negotiable. That is not as the courts like to put it, the only compelling government interests are the ones we gave you in the Constitution. Period. End of story. And if you don't like that, pound sand. Yes, the Declaration says that when governments become destructive of our rights, as the federal government has become, and many of our state governments as well, it is the right of the people to alter them or abolish them. Now, if we're going to alter them, because abolishing them gets very messy, I would prefer to alter than to abolish. But if we're going to alter our government, we must alter the way we choose our representatives. We must stop looking for people that are just looking for a way to control a little bit of the power in that burden of proof. We must, stop looking at representatives as ATM machines that are going to fund our programs or send us checks. No, no, no. We need to look at them as employees that take a solemn promise, an oath, or an affirmation that they will support the Constitution of the United States and, in many cases, the constitutions of our own states as well. And we must judge them based on that. We must look at them and say, have you fulfilled that oath? If not, you're fired. That's the only way. The only way to alter the burden of proof is for the American people to once again take on the mantle of self-government that has been purchased for us by sweat and by blood for over two centuries. When are we going to do that? Are we going to do that? Are we going to restore the fundamental aspect of American government or not? Because if all we're going to do is nibble around the edges, we're going to end up just as corrupt, just as much a slave as if we do nothing. It may just take a little longer. The fundamental difference that must be recognized by the American people is that we are the source of all power. It is inherent in us. And that government, all government, every aspect of government, has the burden of proof before they can exercise any power. Now, before I take this break, I would like you to head over to healthycell.com. And I'll tell you what, I told you this past weekend, I was at the Moment of Truth tour, our summit. 2 days, 12 hours a day, nonstop, go, 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 you know, Niagara Falls of data. I'll tell you, it was hard to keep up. And I was so thankful for Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall. It helped me get through the days alert, attentive, able to absorb and participate. So give it a try. Go to healthycell.com. Try the Focus and Recall. It works wonderful. It's a vitamin supplement. It's not full of sugar or caffeine. In fact, try any of their products because as an America Out Loud listener, they will give you 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com, put your cart together, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout for that 20% off. Once again, that's healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout for 20% off your first order, and we'll be right back after this break.
Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're talking about this concept of the burden of proof, not just in criminal cases, but in governmental actions in general. Now, you've probably heard, I've talked about it, FBI Director Wray, who's been complaining that people have been talking down his FBI and it's going to make things worse. And he basically wants the FBI to have the benefit of the doubt. In other words, we're fine until you prove we do something wrong. But really, does the FBI deserve the benefit of doubt anymore? Sure, it has a history of corruption, all the way back to J. Edgar Hoover and all that. But today, does the benefit of the doubt belong to the FBI? Well, let's just take a look at some of their latest low blows, shall we say. I mean, let's take a look at 2016, where the FBI created Crossfire Hurricane in what appears to be a political operation to attack the then candidate, presidential candidate Donald Trump. Everything from using the Foreign Agent Registration Act as a legal pretext to spy on people, to setting perjury traps, setting the stage so that get someone to perjure themselves. Again, those aren't my words. Those come from declassified transcripts between Papadopoulos and a confidential human source, which I find interesting because if Papadopoulos was charged with and eventually pled guilty to making false statements, wouldn't he be the Fifth Amendment say, or I'm sorry, the Sixth Amendment say he had the right to confront his accuser? And in fact, not one of the four FISA warrants obtained by the FBI was legally justified. It violated the basic concepts of the Fourth Amendment when it comes to issuing a warrant as far as probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. The FBI knew, there's evidence they knew, that the dossier they used was not credible as early as January 2017. And they knew much of the so-called information they were getting was actually opposition research from the Democratic Party, a fact they never told to the FISA court when they were applying for their illegal secret warrants. Despite all of the abuse of our nation's surveillance system to spy on political candidates and even a sitting president, I don't think anyone's been held accountable for any of this. Does the FBI deserve the benefit of the doubt? And as that whole Crossfire Hurricane collapsed, well, lawmakers on Capitol Hill wanted answers for the FBI misconduct. And we have former FBI Director James Comey lying to Congress, claiming the Bureau was investigating individuals, not the Trump campaign. But it was found out, yes, in July of 2016, the FBI in fact did open a counterintelligence investigation into the Trump campaign and into Donald Trump himself. In fact, DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz contradicted the FBI in December of 2019 in a hearing on the release of the reports of the FISA abuses. Have you heard anything being dealt with them? Have you heard of people being fired? Have you heard of people being charged with crimes in the FBI and the DOJ? In fact, there were handwritten notes that came out in the Sussman trial exposed how the FBI agents were trying to cover up their misconduct, and in doing so, misled leaders at the Department of Justice. They lied to them. It also shows that Peter Strzok, who's been in the news lately, concealed the fact that he knew Steele's sources were not credible, but yet he claimed that the dossier was the all great information, crowning report from MI6 and others, but he knew, the evidence shows that he knew it was false, that it was, I should say, the sources were not credible. And again, Director Comey briefed the outgoing Obama administration on the investigation, but later told Trump at least three times that he was not being investigated and refused to tell him about the Clinton funding of the dossier. Now, former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe was fired after lying at least four times to the agency inspector general. The FBI repeatedly told journalists there was no evidence that a foreign power had reviewed emails on Hillary Clinton's improperly handled private email server. But according to an inspector general report in 2018, almost certainly they did. That classified information was garnered from that laptop. And of course, there's a lot of talk about the Hunter Biden laptop. What about the Wiener laptop? See, in 2018, Director Comey told lawmakers that over the course of the investigation into the Clinton emails, the agency thoroughly reviewed the laptop belonging to Huma Aberdeen, who was now the ex-husband of Anthony Weiner. But apparently, little, if any, of that was true. According to a report from Real Clear Investigations, a technical glitch prevented FBI technicians from accurately comparing the new emails with the old emails. Only 3,000 of the 694,000 emails were directly reviewed for classified or incriminating information. When looking at the January 6th incident, it's funny, the FBI refused to hand over to House Republicans the same material they had handed over to the special committee, which is controlled by Democrats. In fact, every appointment had to be approved by Democrats. You may have had people that were Republicans sitting on that committee, but they weren't chosen by the Republican leadership. They were chosen by the Democrats. And let's not forget that more than 800 people have been charged under 18 U.S.C. Section 1752 because on January 6th, Vice President Mike Pence and then Senator Kamala Harris were at the U.S. Capitol. But the Justice Department really was forced to admit that Harris was not in the building for most of the day. And even if Harris was not there, she was not the vice president. Therefore, she does not, or the attacks for Section 1752 don't matter because she wasn't vice president. And this goes on and on and on. What about the evidence of FBI agents trying to entrap people in a plot to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer? And again, this is nothing new. Back in 2008, former Senator Ted Stevens was forced to resign under charges of corruption from the FBI, only to be exonerated after his scandal played out. In other words, the FBI meddled in a senatorial election. Now, based on all of this, do you believe the FBI deserves the benefit of the doubt? What about this past July when the FBI asked the Missouri sheriffs and attorney generals to hand the Missouri sheriffs to hand over information on concealed carry weapons permit holders? The FBI has no legal access to that information. Now, thankfully, many of the sheriffs just plain said no, but again, we have the FBI investigating things they're not allowed to investigate, lying to Congress, lying to the Department of Justice, lying to the American people. Tell me, why in heaven's name would anyone give the FBI the benefit of the doubt? Why would we put the burden of proof on the American people rather than on the FBI, the DOJ, and the rest of the federal government? And we found out that the Detroit chief for the FBI that oversaw the bungled Whitmer plot, where the FBI encouraged and facilitated people to attempt to kidnap Governor Whitmer. Did he get fired? No, he got promoted to the Washington D.C. field office, the same one that raided Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. Does he deserve the benefit of the doubt? I don't think so. You see, government agencies, government actors getting the benefit of the doubt happens in dictatorships, in totalitarian despots, where government actors are allowed to do whatever they want. They're assumed to be innocent they're assumed to have the powers they say they have, but not in a constitutional republic, not in the land of the free. No, in the land of the free, the people have the benefit of the doubt. The burden of proof is on government. You're not allowed to search places without probable cause. And that, by the way, that goes just as much for the judge who signs the warrant as for the federal agency that asks for the warrant. And by the way, that includes the IRS, or as some people like to refer to it as the Infernal Revenue Service, or as one person referred to it, titling an ebook, The Internal Radical Service. Again, by now you've heard they're getting an $87 billion boost in their budget over the next 10 years. And over $80 billion is they're hiring 87,000 new personnel, of which apparently just under 50,000 are going into their IRS enforcement division, where the positions will require that they be willing to carry a weapon, and use deadly force. Now tell me, just why do tax collectors need firearms and the ability to use deadly force in the course of their job? See, that's what I want to know. Why, you know, the one of the reasons we declared independence were the British had put standing armies in our midst. Ladies and gentlemen, we have them today. We don't call them armies. We call them enforcement divisions. Do you know how many law enforcement agencies there are in the federal government? Well, I found this link, and I think it's correct. Let me take a look at this. It says, the U.S. Air Force Office of Special Investigations, the U.S. Army Criminal Investigation Division, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Capitol Police, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Coast Guard Investigative Service, the Customs and Border Protection, the Defense Criminal Investigation Service, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of State's Diplomatic Service, the Department of Transportation, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Office of Odometer Fraud Investigation. There's a mouthful. How do you get that on a badge? The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the Federal Protective Service, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the IRS Criminal Investigation Division, the Marshal Service, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, the Office of Special Investigations, the U.S. Park Police, the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, the U.S. Probation and Pretrial Services, and the U.S. Secret Service. Now, if I did my count correctly, that means there are 24 law enforcement agents or agencies that have law enforcement capabilities. Now, these are people that carry guns. These are people that can use lethal force against you. Why do we need 24 federal law enforcement agencies? Well, there's two reasons. One, they are effectively a standing army. Rather than having the military, we have all these armed law enforcement. We'll just get them to do what the British had their military do when we were colonies, not states. But the other reason is back to this burden of proof. We need these. That's what you would hear. Well, you need the Postal Service has to have inspectors. I mean, and of course, they have to have an enforcement arm. They have to have law enforcement. They have to have that, don't they? And of course, we have to have that each of the military branches have to have their own law enforcement capabilities. And of course, the Department of Transportation has to be able to enforce the laws about odometer fraud. That one I found the most interesting. Look at all these things that are all these multiple law enforcement. I thought we had if we're going to have law enforcement at the federal level, how about we have a few well-regulated law enforcement and let them actually enforce the laws? No, we have to have 24. Why? Well, someone said it was necessary. And I want to remind you the words of William Pitt the Younger. Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves. That's what we have here. In part, we have all of these federal law enforcement divisions and agencies because someone said it was necessary and they placed the burden of proof on the American people to say, nope, they're not necessary. We simply let them create whatever they wanted at their own whim. The American people have lost control of their government. We've denied ourselves the authority to control our public servants. We are letting the lunatics run the asylum. And then we're wondering why things are so crazy out there. So when the federal government says we need 50,000 new agents to enforce the IRS law, agents with not only arrest power, but the willingness to use lethal force, just trust us. I don't. The federal government does not get the benefit of the doubt. They have the burden of proof. But yet, once again, we use these tricks and techniques to hide information in this giant omnibus bill, completely fraudulently named the Inflation Reduction Act. And we give away just a little bit more of our power. We take this crazy world, we turn just a little bit more upside down. We submit ourselves just a little bit more to the actors in government, to the bureaucrats and the agents and the gun-toting members of the federal law enforcement. And we lose a little more freedom and a little more liberty and a little more dignity each and every time we let this happen. And as much as we like to point the finger at Washington, D.C., ultimately the problem ends up with the American people. These laws are passed by our representatives, our employees. Why are we not watching over them? Why are we not holding them accountable for their actions? We have this bureaucratic state because our employees, they looked at this and we let them run amok and we never held them accountable. We were more worried about what goodies they were going to give us than whether or not they were actually following the law. Now, I'm not the only one stating this. There's many people stating this. And you can find a lot of them at AmericaOutloud.com. In fact, I suggest check in every day. Find the latest news and happenings of what is going on with your lives, with your future, with your liberty. It is more important than ever that we not only know what's going on, but that we share this. We wake other people up. So take the stories, the podcasts, the articles, the videos, take all of it and share it with friends, family, social media, anywhere you can. Help us work together so we can continue to secure the blessings of liberty, not just for ourselves, but for the following generations.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
It's summertime. Ready for your vacation to the beach, the lake, or the mountains? But what about your accommodations? Ever wonder what germs were left behind by the previous guests? Kathy G. from Tulsa says the Genesis Fogger gives her peace of mind and confidence when traveling. With Genesis, she knows that the air and surfaces in her vacation rental are free of bacteria and viruses left behind by the previous occupants. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is X-L-E-A-R.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You're rejoining the Constitution Study. And today we're talking about the burden of proof. And I think this is an important point I want all of you to understand. We need to restore the burden of proof on government. Government must prove they are authorized, that this is a just power that they are exercising, that it is just because we consented to it in the constitutions we use to create our governments. That needs to be the mantra, burden of proof. This is a basic foundational concept. As we understand, if we're going to understand the proper role of government, if government gets to tell the people what to do, we are not self-governing. We are subjects. If we, the people, tell government what to do, then we are citizens. As Ronald Reagan once said, government doesn't tell us what to do. We, the people, tell you what to do. Now, in a perfect example of the loss of control that this burden of proof and the lack of burden of proof has led us to, One, we have an agency called the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. Now, I want to remind you, the Centers for Disease Control does not legally exist. I'm going to say that again because a lot of people don't believe me. They do not legally exist. Tracking diseases, controlling diseases, is not a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution. Therefore, according to the 10th Amendment, it is forbidden to the federal government. It belongs either to the states or to the people. So under the 10th Amendment, under the Supremacy Clause, Article 6, Clause 2, since the law that created the CDC was not made pursuant to the Constitution, it is not the supreme law of the land. All right, one more time. Article 6, Clause 2, the Supremacy Clause. The law, the legislation that created the CDC was not made pursuant to the Constitution. Therefore, it is not the supreme law of the land. I'll take it another step farther. Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper 78 said, an act of the legislature contrary to the Constitution cannot be valid. He went on to say that to say so would be to say that the deputy is above his principal, that the servant is above his master, that the representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves. By the way, this was confirmed by the Supreme Court in the case Marbury versus Madison, where they say any legislative act repugnant to the Constitution is void. Have I made my case yet? That the CDC does not legally exist. It is the emperor's new clothes. They're not there, but we act like they are. And now we have the CDC making recommendations. Well, they've been making recommendations all along. But I love this one. CDC recommends masking to stop monkeypox. Now, if you followed any of the news on monkeypox, monkeypox is not an airborne virus. Now, we already know from COVID and the research and studies that masks don't stop COVID because they don't stop respiratory viruses, especially cloth and paper masks. Only KN95 has some limited effect on a respiratory virus. But monkeypox is not a respiratory virus. No. It's transmitted primarily through close physical contact, primarily through sex. Now, I'm not going to make a joke about the mask and that, but what do we have here? We have another government agency saying, listen to us, wear these masks. We don't have any proof. We have no way of proving that they're effective, that they do anything, but do it anyway because we're the government and we said so. They haven't met the burden of proof. They don't legally exist. They haven't met the burden of proof, but how many Americans are walking around today with a diaper on their face because their masters in government recommended it? Think about it. You know, it used to be if you saw somebody walking around in a mask, it was an odd situation, and you assumed they had some condition. Nowadays, you see people walking around in masks, and my first thought is, yeah, they have a condition. It's called servitude. It's called subjugation. It's called, we will simply follow our masters because the representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves in their minds. And now I find this new report. See, a bunch of, you know, remember, we had the same agency recommending you take a vaccine that's not a vaccine, that is an experimental gene therapy treatment, and that they do everything they can to prevent you from getting exceptions. They wanted you to get it if you're in the military, if you worked for the federal government, if you worked for a company over 100 employees. They drove this towards us without any safety testing or insufficient safety testing. They violated all of the standards, all of the medical ethical standards, to shove this into the American people's arms. And a group of independent German scientists found in every one of the vaccine samples, they sampled a bunch of vaccines, and without exception, they found products such as alkali metals such as cesium and potassium, alkali earth metals such as calcium and barium, what they call transition metals like such as cobalt, iron, chromium, titanium, rare earth metals like cerium and gadolinium, and others. Here's what's interesting. None of these ingredients were listed on the vaccine vials than when they came from the manufacturer. So let me ask you, does the CDC deserve the benefit of the doubt? Does the FDA deserve the benefit of the doubt? Or do they have the burden of proof? Should they not have proven beyond a reasonable doubt that these chemicals, that these gene therapy treatments are safe before they started offering, before they recommended shoving them in your arm? Should they have warning labels of the areas where there's increased risk? What if you have a condition that makes you susceptible to higher concentrations of some of these metals or other compounds? How would you know if it wasn't in there? The whole purpose of the FDA was to make sure that the data on the safety label was accurate. Do they deserve the benefit of the doubt? Or do they deserve to be, if not sued, how about criminally charged for not doing their due diligence, for violating the basics of medical ethics? And what about the people who refused the vaccines? The people who lost their jobs, the people who lost government contracts, the people who were coerced. I have friends that were coerced into taking the vaccine. What about them? Now, here we have, I have a report of a U.S. district judge that has put a halt on the discharge of Marines because they were denied religious exemptions from the military's COVID shot mandate. I'm sorry, it's not a vaccine. They always call it a vaccine. It is not a vaccine. It does not meet, I know the CDC changed their definition of vaccine. It does not meet the legal definition of a vaccine. And I've reported on and talked about our men and women in the military who sacrificed so much to defend our Constitution, our liberties, were being treated horribly by our government for not participating in a medical experiment. Well, here we have at least one judge standing up and saying, no, you can't do this. Well, how about the rest of the military? How about the rest of the American people? Don't we have the right to live our lives as we see fit without unnecessary external influence? Don't we have the right to control our own bodies? And don't we have the duty to require government have the burden of proof? Proof that their actions are authorized, that their powers they're exercising are just, before we submit to them, not after. And let's talk a little bit about the courts while we're at it, the judicial system. There's a recent case in Pennsylvania, and it deals with a question about Pennsylvania law. See, under Pennsylvania law, when you mail in a ballot, you're required to place a date on the ballot. Now, that's the law. That law was created by the representatives of the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. It was passed by their legislature, signed by their governor. But you have a judge coming in saying, I'm sorry, you can't do that. See, the court concluded that what happened was the state was sued because several counties had received mail-in ballots that did not have a date placed on them. They received them in time for the election, but they didn't have the date written on them as they're supposed to. And you had a judge saying, well, I don't care about that law. they believe it violates Pennsylvania law and the Civil Rights Act. Now, I want to start out with a simple question. Does the judiciary have the just power to overturn an act of the representatives of the people? Well, the only time that would be just is if it violated the Constitution of the state or of the United States. And while there's a lot of good language in the Civil Rights Act, the bare fact is Congress can only impact the manner of choosing members of the U.S. House and members of the U.S. Senate. No other election does Congress have the legal authority to set the manner of choosing people, choosing people for those offices. It's just the Constitution of the United States, folks. I'm sorry, that's what it says. And in one last story, I want to give you an example of what happens when we let governments run amok, when we don't require they show a burden of proof. There's a church in Batavia, New York. It's out in Western New York. And they are holding a what they call a Reawaken America Tour event. They held one. And the Attorney General of the state of New York sent them a letter warning them that they are investigating, they plan to investigate and prosecute acts of violence, intimidation, threats, or harassment towards others based on a belief or perception of characteristics including race, national origin, gender, and sexual orientation. Now, apparently she sent the letter before the event because I saw a quote. It says, "As New York's top law enforcement officer, I have significant concerns that the Reawaken America Tour's upcoming event at the Cornerstone Church in Batavia, New York on August 12th and 13th could spur extremist or racially motivated violence. Where's your burden of proof? Where's your probable cause? I'm sorry," her name is Letitia James, "your concerns do not become probable cause. Just because you don't like them doesn't give you probable cause to investigate them. The burden of proof is on you, Ms. James, that there is probable cause, not your feelings or intuition." Now, I don't know what happened at this event, but apparently, even before the event happened, the chief law enforcement officer, or the top law enforcement officer of the state of New York, was already investigating before anything happened, and apparently based on nothing more than her concerns. This is where our sheriffs become so important. I don't know the sheriff that covers Batavia, New York. I would hope that if they were a constitutional sheriff, they would have sent a letter back to Ms. James saying, unless you have probable cause, you are not allowed to harass people in my county. Legally, he can do that. See, your sheriff is elected by the people. They take an oath to support the Constitution. The sheriff doesn't work for the state of New York. The sheriff isn't underneath the Attorney General of the state of New York. And the Attorney General of the state of New York probably should be investigated herself for intimidation. Now, if she had articulated in this probable cause of a problem, probable cause, well, then why didn't she just get a warrant and start searching? No, this is intimidation. This is what happens when we let governments act without the burden of proof. Just imagine your event, your gathering, your social group getting a letter from the government, not because there's probable cause that you're going to do something wrong, that you're going to intimidate people, that you're going to that people don't like you, but simply because they're concerned. You know, I'm concerned about a lot of things. It doesn't mean I have the right to open an investigation without probable cause, especially with the police powers. See, this is the consequence. And while a lot of people are looking at those consequences, to me, the central cause is our misunderstanding. The cornerstone is our misunderstanding of the powers of government, where they fit, and where the American people fit in those power structures. We, the people, ordain and establish the Constitution that created the federal government. We, the people, ordain and establish the constitutions that created our states, including the state of New York that Ms. James works for. We, the people, have permitted, has consented to certain just powers being exercised by government. And it is important. It is a duty of we, the people, to make sure that our creations in government have the burden of proof that they are exercising a power we have consented to before they do so, and then punish them when they don't, and punish them when they go beyond their just powers. Now, I hope you found this an interesting discussion. I hope it made you think a little differently about how we stand before our governments, that they work for us, not the other way around. If you like this, do me a favor, share this with others. Let them know. Weekdays, 4 p.m. Eastern, they can hear the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. You can also find the show on podcast. It usually comes a day or two after it's broadcast on the radio. They can use your favorite podcasting app, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeartPodcast. You can find all the links at the homepage of AmericaOutLoud.com. So do me a favor, check them out, share them. Do all we can. Join this movement to secure the blessings of liberty for everyone in this great nation, from sea to shining sea.